Felger and Mass.
Little sport dork orgy. So sporty.
Oh, yeah.
So sporty. Sports and sports and sports. Sports in your face. Sports.
Felger and Mass. Awesome. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
David, the clincher in Houston obviously was a big day for the Red Sox, but also a big day for you personally. You've mentioned some of the narratives that you've been responsible for. Have the days since then seemed a little bit lighter for you? Different at all? Do you feel a little relieved? Do you feel better? How would you describe it?
I guess lighter is a good word. Yeah, you know, just I mean, yesterday we had media day. I didn't have to. I got to look forward to it for the first time in a long time. Today, you know, it's definitely a weight lifted off of me for sure. Not like food tastes better or anything like that, but it was time, and you know, I'm definitely glad that the time came and we moved past it, and you know, I look forward to. To doing the same thing tomorrow.
It's Felger Mass from Lucky Strike here on 98.5 The Sports Hub, simulcast across New England and the country on NBC Sports Boston. David Price yesterday on his start tonight. Boy, did I like that answer. Boy, did I think that was... I thought that was excellent. You know, when he says... You know, I mean, he owned it. Are you relieved? Does it feel good? Is it... Yeah, lighter. Yeah. Yep, I feel like a weight's lifted. It was time. It was nice facing the media and not have to face those a-hole questions about how come you can't win in the postseason. Like, it's just being so honest. Like, I mean...
It's the truth. It's self-aware. I'm glad that he acknowledged it because it was a real thing.
Oh, my God. But can you imagine, like, every year going into this time of year and then facing those press conferences and all they want to know is about why you're 0-9 with a 6.03 ERA? Like, that gets painful.
Of course.
And so, like, just the fact that he can acknowledge it and acknowledge the drought, acknowledge that he got over it, acknowledge that it feels good. Not like it makes my food taste any better or anything, but, you know, I didn't have to worry about going into media day this year, and, you know, and it's like, oh, wow.
My mother-in-law's meatloaf still sucks. Astro didn't really enjoy his kibble, but, yeah, you know, I feel better.
So, I mean, I don't know, like, if that's any sort of tip-off, and, it's, you know, who knows. But I feel like his mental state, his comportment is... there. It's like there's acknowledgement and he's no longer fighting it. You know what I mean? He's not fighting anything, which is a good sign. And so, I don't know. You can't judge from a comment, but it feels like he's in a decent place. I'll put it to you like that.
And that's a good way to put it. I wonder if it's also part of the reason that maybe he got over the hump. Because early in that series against Houston, he said, look, I understand the narrative. I deserve it. Like, I heard that comment. I went, whoa. Like, now there's an acknowledgement of, okay, I get it. I mean, you know, hey, we're trying to do something bigger here, guys. Listen, I appreciate the questions. Believe me, I'm 0-9. I get it. I deserve it. And I don't know, maybe that's the thing that clicked before that game against the Astros in Game 5 where he's out there throwing the night before, getting ready to come in relief or whatever else. He says, you know what? Why am I bitching at these guys? I just need to go out and pitch well.
No, it was truly the soothing nature of housework. Absolutely.
Raking.
Yeah. I mean, I can attest to that totally. Do the dishes. It'll soothe you, Sarah.
I usually clean my...
Try it. Just try it.
I usually clean my car. It's a big one for me. Clean my car.
All right, so here's Chris in the car on David Price. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, I don't understand. There's nothing this guy could do to me that's going to make him fit and make him embraced by Red Sox fans. Like, we've had love affairs with the worst players ever. Willie Malpena, right? I mean, this is worse than Crawford. It's like a psychological...
Okay, so your phone's just way too bad. He says, why can't Boston embrace Price? You win a championship and he a part of it, they will.
Sure.
Done.
Yeah. I mean, look,
he
took a big step in the last series. And again, look, I told you I couldn't hear any of the pregame last night, so you guys tell me. I read it, but I didn't hear it. I'm assuming the ovation for him when he got introduced was very, very good.
Yeah.
And so he deserved that. Right? He finally made a significant contribution. The fans recognize it. And now maybe all of a sudden this guy turns in the other direction. He's got a little wind at his back.
Alan in Florida, be quick. We only got a minute.
Okay. You know, I was at the game last night, Maz. I should have stopped by and say hello. I would have made your day. I want to tell you, you just said today, you know, it's not to me, this is the biggest game of the whole series. Everything you say, I disagree with. I mean, The only advantage the Dodgers have in this series is the third game in L.A. when you have Buehler, who has great stuff against Porcello. They win tonight, they're guaranteed coming back to Boston. This game is huge.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. I mean,
see, I don't feel like it's huge, but they're all important. I'm just telling you that you're up 1-0.
Well, I mean, Alan, so you feel that this series is in the balance to the point where 1-1, 2-1, that sort of thing matters?
Absolutely. You're going out to Dodger Stadium. You're going to be at Houston's disadvantage with one of your players out. You got this kid. I like stuff. You know, you guys can laugh all you want about Kelly.
No, Buehler's got stuff.
For me.
No, I like stuff,
he
too.
Can come in for me because he has stuff, probably better than any other pitcher on either team. And Buehler is like this. So I don't want to go to L.A. I want to go to L.A. down up 2-0, knowing no matter whatever happens, we're back at Fenway Park.
Okay, fair enough, Alan. Like, I think a lot of people assume, and I don't know if you're wrong to assume this, that the Red Sox are just better. They're better, and they're just better and relentless, and they're just going to pound their way through this thing. They're just going to hit their way to a championship, and it doesn't matter whether they go 1-1, 2-1. It just doesn't matter. That they're just the talent's going to win out, and the way they're playing is going to win out.
I mean, last night didn't do anything to dispel that notion. I told you, I thought this was going to be a series coming in, but at every pivotal point, in every series they have played thus far, the Red Sox exploit a mistake by the other side, or they execute something, or Cora makes a good decision, or a decision that works out. Maybe that's a better way to put it. Whatever it is, every time they reach a pivotal point, and I say it goes their way, and I'm not suggesting that it's luck. I'm just saying that it breaks the way they want it to break, or maybe they do get a break, whatever it is.
I just think the Dodgers have a chance because of their pitching. But if you're going to knock around Kershaw like you did last night and look that comfortable, I mean, face it. You looked comfortable against Kershaw. It wasn't just that you knocked him around. It's like he didn't fool you. If that's the way it's going to be, then the Dodgers have no chance. Kershaw has to be an ace, and he's got to go multiple games and all of that. So, I mean, I don't know. Let's see. He's been better at home. And he was like this in the Brewers series where he got knocked around in the first game and then came back to L.A. and just was lights out. So we'll see. L.A.'s one pitcher that you couldn't touch last night, Roberts takes out after two batters.
Pedro Baez.
So,
and meanwhile, Murray's wheel of gutless bums has turned into the Nasty Boys. Everybody who comes in blows people away. And Joe Kelly has morphed into Pedro Martinez with a 100-mile-an-hour fastball and a killer change. Like, all of a sudden, it's like they can't lose.
Brett in Connecticut, what do you got for us?
Yeah, you guys have kind of been making the argument the past few days, it seems like, that the run differential thing, that the Dodgers have underachieved and the Red Sox have overachieved. I think that's, that whole statistic kind of says the nature of these two teams and why it's actually a number that makes it more favorable for the Sox to win, because they do overachieve. They do all the little things right that win games, and that the Dodgers, why they have a lot of talent, they can definitely win this series. They're a good team. I don't think there's any mistake in that. But that whole argument is wrong. It just makes no sense to say because they've underachieved all year that now all of a sudden they're going to play great. I think that's my only point on that.
No, I think that's fair that, you know, maybe the Red Sox are better situationally and are more, just have a more winning sort of, I mean, I don't know what I'm trying to say, but they play the game the right way intangibly speaking. That gives them more wins than the nerds would tell you. So that's good. But what that nerd stat tells you is that L.A. has the talent. So start with that. L.A. does have the talent.
So that whole Pythagorean win-loss thing, that's based on the run differential.
Yep.
A lot of the nerds will tell you that the run differential is a better metric because a lot of times the other stuff is determined by luck. Stuff that they can't quantify.
Right.
So it isn't always about, as the caller suggested, you know, they executed a key moment. Sometimes you just get a bad break. Because that whole one-run game theory, a lot of the nerds believe that the one-run games are just luck.
Of course. Oh, no. They think any big hit is luck. That a hit in the ninth is that Nunez's home run last night, it gets the same amount of weight as a throwaway game at the end of September when you're up 20 games in first place. The nerd punches it into the computer the exact same way.
So the thing that, I mean, it's absolutely the case of what they believe. And the one thing I will really give the Red Sox credit for, and maybe we didn't give enough of this during the year, their base running early in the year looked like it did last season for the most part, and they were making mistakes, and really stupid ones, and it borderline sucked at times. They really cleaned up a lot of it, and they just put so much pressure on you offensively in so many different ways. Whether it's hitting the ball out of the ballpark, drawing a walk, taking an extra base, stealing a base. And last night wasn't perfect because J.D. Martinez ran on a 3-2 and got thrown out easily. Right? So it wasn't perfect. I didn't love that decision at that particular point in time. But Betts and Benintendi in the first inning, you got them on their heels right away. right away, and they're outfield defense in the Houston series, they really can beat you a lot of ways.
Real quick, Dave and Wellesley. Go ahead, Dave.
Mike, how's my phone?
It's okay.
Your phone sucks. You guys have so much effing background noise. I can't. I don't understand why you guys, management, whoever makes the decision to have a stupid radio show at a stupid bar when you guys just built this brand new facility. You guys, you're on effing radio, and I hear people bowling and laughing and farting. And Mike, your phone sucks, and I'm negative, and I'm driving to go pick up my wife, who I hate, and I hate you guys, and I'm so negative.
Awesome. I'm not going to disagree with you on the location, but Lucky Strike, a tremendous facility. Tremendous facility.
I think some guy behind us just picked up the 710.
I told you what I think this place used to be when I first moved here. But Murray, let me tell you something. Back in the day, there was a lot of dope smoking and ping pong and pool playing in this particular facility. Let me tell you that much, man. Let me tell you that much. It brings back old memories. Because this used to be all pool tables and ping pong tables and whatnot, and, like, you know, bar games and
this
whatnot.
This is your spot?
Ooh. Bong Olympics here, baby. But even before that, I was told, and I hope this is accurate. Maybe an old-time Boston guy can tell me this. You can sign it around the top floor. You can kind of see it. Is this used to be a gay roller rink? Like, not ice skating, but
yeah. Roller skating.
A gay roller skating rink.
A lot of ripped dudes in short shorts.
I'm just telling you. I don't know.
I bet it was a party.
And then it became the dance factory.
So, Felger and Maz from that environment, I think, would be another thing to consider.
Oh, I would love. We should absolutely do that show. I'm in. Is there money in it?
We're going to get back to and reset all of our Red Sox stuff after we do just a little Red Sox breather. We've been wall-to-wall Red Sox today, as you might imagine. We'll do a quick little Patriots breather with Paul Perillo from Patriots Football Weekly. Bedard had some interesting thoughts on the Patriots defense yesterday about it's not getting better, and it almost always gets better at this time of year. Whether it's great or not great, it still shows improvement, and it's not doing it now. And, you know, what do we attribute that to, and what does it mean for this team? I want Paul's reaction to that, also the Patrick Peterson rumors. We'll do that quickly with Perillo coming up next here on Felger and Maz.
The Fall Classic at Fenway. Felger and Maz are live from Lucky Strike with Budweiser, the home of Red Sox fans. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Little Red Sox breather, okay? We'll just to get a little break from the Red Sox so we can reset all this stuff, and we'll do it with our guest, our friend Paul Perillo from Patriots.com, also known as Sunshine.com, because let's face it, the sun is always shining down there. Pip, how you doing?
Doing great, guys. How are you?
Great.
Excellent. How come they didn't ask you to narrate the opening of the World Series, Paul?
I don't think they could afford me.
Yeah.
All right, Paul. Yeah. I'm going to play a clip from Bedard, who was on with us yesterday, and I want you to react to it, okay? So this is Bedard on the Patriots' defense and the lack of progress related to that defense. Billy, if you have that clip, if you could please run it.
The defense is getting worse when it should be getting better, and I've never seen this before in a recent Patriots defense, and I don't know what to make of it. They're better than what they've shown, but, you know, all of a sudden we're in week eight now, and we're still talking about the defense where they should be slowly getting better. It's not happening, and that – I don't know what to make out of it, and it scares me a little bit.
Okay, Paul, simple as that. What do you think?
Well, it's hard to argue with the fact that they haven't really shown any progress. I don't know if it's any worse or better, or either way. I will say if it doesn't get any better this week against this opponent, then I think it might be time to just completely lose all hope on that side of the ball. But, I mean, it's been ugly. And here's the thing that continues to happen that I've been surprised about. I guess this would be in line with what Greg is talking about. Specifically, the mobile quarterbacks are killing them. And usually when they have a significant issue, Mike, you know this as well as anyone, Bill usually fixes that.
Yeah.
You know, he might go into a game and say, if this guy, you know, is going to throw for 350 against us, so be it, but we're not going to let him run all over us the way Blake Bortles did. And again, the way that Mitch Trubisky did. And that to me has been very surprising. It's the repeat errors. Usually error repeaters are either, you know, ushered out the door, or they're rectified. And so far, we've seen neither one of them, and it hasn't been pretty.
And Greg's point was, too, is that the defense seemed to have corrected a bunch of stuff in that Miami game a couple weeks ago. And he said, you know, there's a sort of a typical pattern to a Patriots season where first month, you know, extended yep. training camp, they have some fits and starts, and then they have a game around week 4, 5, 6 where they seem to straighten everything out, and then it's off to, you know, it's off to the races from there. And it's sort of that sets the edge, that sets the that, you know, they figure out their issues and they go on from there. Well, they did that against Miami, and then they backslid. And he said that that points to something not being quite right.
Yeah, I mean, certainly it would look that way. And I would say in retrospect, looking back at the Miami game, if you recall, I think the day after, Adam Gase had some pretty pointed criticism toward Ryan Tannehill after that game, saying there were plays to be made, there were receivers open, and the quarterback didn't get him the ball. Now, what we come to find out a few weeks later is that he went into that game with a shoulder injury that has prevented him from playing the last 2 weeks. So you wonder if maybe he just physically couldn't get the job done that day. Not that Tannehill's a great quarterback. We know he's not. But, you know, maybe he was exceptionally bad that day, and it wasn't just because, you know, he's not that good, but maybe physically he wasn't ready. And based on the other games, that's the one outlier. That's the only game they played good defense in, and they played excellent that day. I thought they had pretty good coverage, but we haven't seen anything resembling that in any of the other games. So to Greg's point, I guess I'm with him in that it hasn't seemed to get any better. I don't know if it's gotten any worse, but it really hasn't gotten any better.
So, Paul, we've known all along about the linebacking core, right? They're just thin there. They don't have great talent at linebacker, and Hightower maybe has lost a step. Is there any reason to be worried about the secondary?
You know, the secondary, I don't think it's been great, but I think out of the three levels of defense, the front, you know, between the pass rush and the run defense, the linebackers that you talked about, Tony, and the coverage, I think the coverage has probably been the best of those three, but it hasn't by any means been good. I think there have been occasions where quarterbacks have, you know, taken the ball down, looked around, had plenty of time, and not really found anyone. And I think that was the case with Trubisky the other day. I thought, you know, and part of that was him. But I think some of those runs came as a result of him looking around, not really finding anybody, and still having plenty of opportunity to tuck and run and make some big plays. So I think the pass rush has been rather quiet, and I think the coverage has been a little bit better. Not much. Now, I don't think that they've gotten great plays. What they have done a good job in the secondary is when they've had an opportunity to turn the ball over, they've taken it. And I thought they made two really nice plays with Jonathan Jones and J.C. Jackson the other day. Again, I understand that Trubisky was erratic, and you guys, I'm sure, will focus on that. But they have done a decent job of taking the ball away. And in this day and age of defense, I think that's enough. If you can get a couple of plays where you're not allowing scoring drives, and especially if you can turn the ball over, with the Patriots offense the way it's playing, that's enough.
Okay, Paul, trade deadline a week from yesterday. Trade deadline yep. a week from yesterday. Rumors of Pat Peterson, the Pats being in on Pat Peterson. They've been sort of shot down locally by Tom Curran. It feels like there's reports today out of Arizona. That thing is off the table. I want your thoughts on Pat Peterson, the likelihood there, and would you take him? And if not that, what do you think the Patriots are in on? And do you think they're definitely in on something? And does that Gilmore restructure last week tell you that?
Yeah, I'll start in order. The Peterson thing, I'm with Tom on. I didn't see it. I didn't, you know, when the team was so adamant about him not being available, that's kind of the way I looked at it. And I know there's been some reports out of Arizona now that Peterson met with Michael Bidwell, and the two have sort of agreed. And I don't think there's going to be a trade forthcoming. Would I be interested in him if he were available? Absolutely. And I think there are ways that you can figure out how to fit him in. They're a little bit tight against the cap, to be sure, but we all know that stuff like that can be easily manipulated, but I don't think it's going to happen. I think anybody on defense would make sense. Like I said, the front seven to me would need to be addressed because I just feel like they do not. The combination of the lack of speed in the second level and chasing down these quarterbacks and the lack of a pass rush is a bad combination. I think if you can get into the backfield and pressure quarterbacks into, you know, hurried throws and quick throws, I think you can sort of mitigate the lack of athleticism. But when you have both of them going on, I think it's a tough combination. So if they're going to make a move, I would think it would be somewhere in that front seven. You know, I keep, you know, sort of hearing and seeing veiled things on Twitter and elsewhere about Jamie Collins possibly coming back. So, wow. I wouldn't be surprised if something like that happened. I haven't really heard anything in the building on that, so I want to be clear. These are just sort of internet rumors. But you know, I think they need an athletic guy. The guy Andy Hart, my buddy, always talks about is the kid in Arizona, Deion Buchanan, former first-round pick, sort of a safety linebacker hybrid-type player, an athletic type, a kind of player that Bill has sort of always been enamored with. And I think that he would add some speed to that level as well. But if they're going to make a move, and Bill almost always does, that's where I would make it, somewhere in the middle of that defense.
No, this doesn't relate to the trade deadline, Paul, but are you worried about Gronk?
I'm always worried about Gronk, and whenever his back comes up, and I especially get worried when, you know, you see he's on the injury report, ankle, and then all of a sudden they add a back. That, to me, means something got aggravated at practice that particular day. He didn't end up playing in the game. I know that they didn't immediately rule him out, and it was under the guise of, you know, there was a possibility that he could get worked out and maybe be able to get there last minute, but I'm going to worry about it until I see him stack a couple of games together and look like his former self. I don't think he's looked like himself, really, since the first week of the season. I thought he was outstanding against Houston, and I think he's been rather quiet in most of the games since. Now, he had the two big plays late in the Kansas City game, but they weren't necessarily those Gronk kind of plays where he's catching the ball with guys hanging on him. I think one of them he slipped out and was a great disguise, great scheme, you know, play call by Josh McDaniels that got him free. And the other one, he just, you know, he got down the seam sort of uncovered. So I haven't seen Gronk really look like Gronk since week one, and that is always going to be a concern to me because I think the way the offense is set up, it absolutely can be dominant if everything goes according to plan. If all of the guys are healthy, Edelman, Gronkowski, Gordon, Hogan, everybody falls into a role. James White, Sony Michel. Now you're starting to see you take a guy away here or there. Are you going to go back to the way it was in the first month? And if that's the case, it's a bad combination with what we just talked about on defense.
Paul, thanks for taking the time. We appreciate it, man.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Paul, see you, Pablo.
Paul Perillo, Patriots Football Weekly. He's not going to do his regular stint in studio because, let's face it, got a lot of baseball and a lot of World Series to get to, so he joins us on location in Foxborough. Maybe we'll get back to him next week, depending how long this series goes, though you never know. So we will get back to all of our Red Sox stuff. We will reset all of our top thoughts from last night's game, our thoughts going into tonight's game, too, with David Price on the mound. We'll do it all right after Murray's update, so don't go anywhere.
The Fall Classic at Fenway. Felger and Maz are live from Lucky Strike with Budweiser, the home of Red Sox fans. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
How do you make history? You win. Championships. Not once, not twice. You win again and again.
Possible dream.
Everything you do every day is about winning. There are few organizations in history who've created a tradition of winning. Here are two from two cities that have experienced success in every major sport. Players have changed, but the commitment, the ambition, the goal has not. It's been like this for more than a century. These two teams now play for a ring, a championship, history. The Dodgers, the Red Sox, in the World Series.
Again, that was the open to the World Series last night with Bill Belichick narrating, and I thought that was badass. I thought, well, that was tremendous. Tremendous. And how lucky you are, how lucky we are, and just how special that is. And I don't know if you realize that there's not many markets in the country that could even do that, could even come close. Even if they wanted to, they couldn't do that. What other city could have one legendary all-time coach or player from one team narrate the opening to the championship series of another team in town? You can't, in half the country, you couldn't even do that. Even if you took someone from the dead. I mean, where I'm from, you'd have to raise Vince Lombardi from the grave to do that. You couldn't do it.
If you tried with Favre, it would be so mocked.
He's not Bill Belichick. He won one. He doesn't rise to that level.
Chicago could do it with Jordan.
Or Phil Jackson. Okay, so there's a comp, right? That could happen. The Cubs or the White Sox could be in the World Series, and Jordan could narrate, and that exactly. I said before the New York Football Giants or, like, say, the New York Knicks could be in the final, and Derek Jeter narrates. Okay, fine. There's another one. L.A. could do it. If just replaced Bill Belichick last night with Magic Johnson or Pat Riley or Kobe, they could do it. I wonder how you would feel about that. I know how you would feel about that. But either way, they could do it. But it's like, it's like a handful of places could even come close to doing something like that. And it's just, I'm not even a quote-unquote fan, you know, like most of you. And that's tingly. That's just, like, that is, to me, that is just so awesome. And I don't care what the script was or how the delivery was. I don't care. I just, the fact that Belichick opened your World Series, that's ballsy. I'm sorry.
No, it's pretty cool. I told you, the first time I heard it today was on the air because I was in a bar last night. I couldn't hear anything in the broadcast, which really bummed me out because I love to rip the broadcasters. It's one of my favorite things to do. But I couldn't hear the open because I don't know. I half wonder when they get to L.A. for Game 3 and we change venues. Do they introduce an L.A. voice there just to keep everybody in L.A. happy? Well, I mean, so those people aren't crying?
I mean, if you're a Dodger fan and you care, and that list is very small, but, I mean, I guess that would bother you. I know it would bother you if that were Magic Johnson last night.
Oh, for sure.
Or Pat Riley or Kobe. That would bother you, and you'd have a case. And so I wonder if they will even it out or not, because I wonder if L.A. even cares. Like, they even notice.
Oh, no, they don't care. Are the people there?
Are Dodger fans even there for the open of the game? Like, no, they arrive in the fourth inning, even if it's on TV.
I told you, this is one of my whole things about L.A. I think it's one of the great fraud sports towns in America. But that's another story for another day. So, I don't know, if it were me with Fox and the venue shifting, I'd use that as an opportunity to pump up Game 3 and have an L.A. voice. I would.
Okay, so in terms of what stood out last night, to me, again, I'll just give you the three things. To me, the Red Sox relentlessness, and again, I hate saying that because it sounds like something that's on one of their T-shirts. I think it is, in fact. It's like a slogan, but they are. They are freaking relentless, that team. And if you make a mistake defensively, if you fall asleep for a second, they're going to take advantage. And it happened last night. Freeze drops a pop-up. The next thing you know, Betts is on base. He steals second. Puig makes a stupid throw from the outfield. Benintendi takes an advantage. And the next thing you know, it's 2-0. Because the Red Sox are just, bang, ready to go, relentless. And the Dodgers didn't match. The Dodgers did not match that level to start that ball game. And that's what stood out for me. But the Red Sox are just, it's incredible, man. Two outs, they'll get the base hit. Two strikes, they bear down and have a good at-bat. You make a mistake, they take advantage. And that is just, that's the way they've been the whole season, and that's the way they were last night. That stood out. What also stood out is that, again, L.A. wasn't really ready to match it. Wake up, guys. The Red Sox are going a million miles an hour. This is the World Series. And the third thing is, again, it's another obvious theme this whole postseason, is that whatever Cora does is going to turn out to be right. And whatever the other guy does is going to turn out to be wrong. Whether it's a good decision or not on both sides, whatever Cora does is going to work, and whatever Roberts does is not. Or at least that's what happened last night. And we went into some of these decisions. Some I think Roberts deserves legitimate second-guessing for. I think others, he was just playing the same matchup that Cora would, and his guy didn't execute, and the Red Sox guy did. I think in some cases, Cora was just playing the matchups too. Turns out his guy executed, the other guy didn't. But it's just, once again, whatever Cora does is going to work, and whatever the other guy does is not.
This, to me, takes the term hot manager to a whole new level this postseason with Cora. I've seen managers get hot before. I've seen Joe Torre. It happened with him in the postseason where everything he did worked out. Every decision he made in a game would play exactly the way he wanted when the Yankees were going in some of those great runs there, or that great run in the late 90s. Cora right now, to me, is on another planet. Like, it really is unbelievable. I thought in the seventh inning, I thought he got a little bit lucky. There were some opportunities there and some matchups there, rather, that I thought actually favored the Dodgers.
Seventh inning, you meaning the Dodgers half of the seventh?
Yes, I thought the Dodgers got, when the Dodgers are batting in the top of the seventh, I thought there were some matchups there that really favored Los Angeles.
Specifically, how did Cora get lucky?
Okay, so I look at the whole sequence there with Brazier on the mound, and the Dodgers sent all those lefties up there, and it pretty much worked the way Roberts wanted it to. Muncy got a hit. Grandal got a walk. He ended up getting Machado with the bases loaded while Eovaldi was warm in the bullpen. And Cora left Brazier in the game. I think the Dodgers will take that one again tonight. I think absolutely that Roberts looks at that one and says, hey, if I get my lefties against Brazier in the seventh inning of a one-run game, basically, and I can get the bases loaded for Manny Machado against Ryan Brazier, I'll take it.
And so Cora was on the verge of having a major second guess go against him there. And that's that seventh inning. Again, Brazier did not have his good stuff last night. He did not. with one out. He goes 0-2 on Muncy and then can't finish him off, and Muncy singles. Next guy up is Turner, singles on the first at bat, hard hit right up the middle. So now he's given up first and second, one out. He keeps him in to face Grandal, the switch hitter. He walks him on five pitches. And now here comes Machado. And you're up 5-3, bases loaded. Manny Machado, the most dangerous guy on the Dodgers. Brazier doesn't have his stuff. He had just walked the bases loaded. And Cora let him go. And he got lucky because I think Machado rushed that at bat. He swung at the first pitch. He got a sac fly, but it wasn't a good at bat. He didn't make Brazier work, and the Red Sox got away with it. If Manny Machado drives that ball into the gap for a three-run double, today everybody shows up and says, what the hell are you doing staying with Ryan Brazier there? He didn't have his stuff. It was obvious.
Right, and because Eovaldi was ready to go, they just clearly don't want to bring Eovaldi in with men on base.
And then he brings in Eddie Rodriguez for Bellinger left on left. And Erod immediately goes 2-0 on Bellinger and then throws him a fastball down the middle on the third pitch that Bellinger swings at and pops up. And so, you know, what the hell are you doing going with Eddie Rodriguez, who sucked this whole day? Blah, blah, blah. Like, if the Dodgers had executed in that spot, all these second guesses would be on Cora's side this morning.
See, the Bellinger one's a big one to me, too. Because, in fact, it might be the biggest one of the game, because I look at that one and say, the Red Sox don't have a lefty in the bullpen. Not one that they trust. They don't. I mean, it's Rodriguez and Pomeranz. And the fact is, they really don't trust either guy. And yet, that matchup happened. And honestly, Rodriguez didn't get him out. Bellinger got himself out. Like, that's how I look at that one. And so I think, again, they caught a break there.
Okay, and then the obvious one on the L.A. side, and it was much worse, was Dave Roberts taking out Pedro Baez after Pedro Baez was throwing bullets, was throwing gas, and it struck out two straight batters, including a lefty in Mitch Moreland. So, again, in that inning, Benintendi led off with a double. It's a 5-4 game at that point. This is the next half inning. It's a man on second, nobody out, and it's a 5-4 game. You've got to keep that run at second. So Baez comes in. He blows away Moreland. He blows away Bogarts, and here comes Devers. And Dave Roberts did not trust Baez throwing to the lefty Devers. Didn't trust his eyes. Maybe, I don't know if he was looking, if his head was just buried in the three-ring binder. But Baez was clearly throwing the ball well, clearly blowing people away. And Roberts did not want Baez to face Devers.
I'm not sure he trusted the three-ring binder either. I'm not sure what the hell that Roberts is doing in that situation. So Baez against left-handed batters this year, the average against was 164. And he brought in Alex Wood to face Devers, and Wood gave up 14 home runs this year, every one of them to a right-handed batter.
He brought in Wood to face Nunez. So
what did I say, Devers?
Devers, yeah.
Yeah, I meant Nunez. Well, he got Nunez, right.
Roberts knew. Robert says, and you'll hear, Robert says, we liked, rather than Baez versus Devers, he preferred Wood versus Devers or Wood versus Nunez. He would have taken either of those last two scenarios, Wood versus Devers or Nunez, instead of Baez, who was throwing rockets against Devers, even though it clearly looked like Baez was on. And, you know, Cora also played the matchups versus his eyes because Devers was swinging the bat well. So he took out Devers. He took out a better hitter in favor of a left-right matchup. But Cora did work, and what Roberts did didn't.
See, I still blame Roberts here more than Cora because, again, Roberts triggered the change. Roberts went to the lefty and forced Cora to go to the righty. I'd say forced, but it triggered it.
Okay.
Right? To me, that was one was a reaction to the other. I blame Roberts more for that.
Okay, your thoughts on all of these items and your thoughts on Game 2 tonight. I promise, to your calls right after these words.
In the shadows of Fenway, Felger and Maz are at Lucky Strike on Lansdowne with Budweiser on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
The slider to right-handers is a tough pitch for them to pick up. And Nunez, a good bad ball hitter off of left-handers.
That is hammered in the left. It is gone. Pinch hit three-run home run, Nunez. And the Red Sox open up game one.
Baez had, you know, had a couple of good-looking strikeouts there. Did you just want to avoid Devers in that spot, going to Wood? Can you talk about that decision?
We talked about it with Petey throwing the ball well right there, but Devers really good against a right-hander, and to get a guy off the bench and Nunez, I really liked Alex in that spot. I did. So whether they were going to hit Devers with a lead or go to the bench and go with Nunez, I still liked Alex in that spot.
I love it. It's a challenge. They're going to make some match. They're going to pinch hit. They're going to bring their relievers, and you have to, and you know how I say I hate managing the other team, but actually you have to manage them.
Part of the game last night, Dave Roberts, Alex Cora explaining. I know what also goes up your keister is that instead of looking at Baez's numbers versus lefties, his strength, how good Baez was that night or his overall work against lefties, instead, he looked at Devers' left-right split and tried to play off someone else's weakness versus playing his own strength.
See, I hate that. I just can't tell you how much I hate that. Because now, again, that's really what he did. And a lot of managers do this. Rather than playing to your own strength, you play to the other guy's weakness, even if it means your guy's not as good. It's like, your guy's going to suck worse than mine. Right? Like, that mentality, I can't stand that. To me, that is like trying not to lose versus trying to win. Sending your guy out there that you believe in and saying to Baez, you know what? I don't care what Rafael Devers did. You are the man right now. Blow his ass away. And he didn't do that. I Roberts overmanages the game. I mean, he's one of the worst in baseball at it. And when I say worst at it, he's a good manager. But this whole practice of micromanaging games, he's one of the biggest culprits.
All right, to your reaction, as promised. Jay and Pembroke on David Price tonight. Go ahead, Jay.
Hey, guys. How's it going? I was just wondering, you know, regarding David Price, I really think this is a big game for him tonight. And by saying that, I think, you know, if he goes out and pitches a game like he did last week, I mean, he pitched a gem of a game. If he does that again tonight, does that kind of get the monkey off his back?
Just about. I just have to cut you off. If he pitches well and they win a championship, all's forgiven. It is. Don't you think?
Well, yeah. Go ahead, Murray.
No, yeah, totally. I mean, I think we're partially there now. But if he helps them win one of these games in this World Series, yes, absolutely. It's over.
You're not all the way there.
No, I said kind of there.
If they lose this series and he loses two starts, we're right back where we started from.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, like, but I mean, like, I like his chances. I like where he's sitting. I don't think that's going to happen. I'm just telling you, we're not all the way there. But if he pitches well and they win a championship, that's all we ask. That's it.
Carlo brings up a good point, though.
If he
does it again, now it's two in a row. Now you're starting to build momentum in the other direction. Now all of a sudden the confidence gets higher, and now you say, okay, he stemmed the tide. He broke the trend. He broke through, and now here you go. Now maybe he rolls in the other direction.
Nick in Plymouth on David Price. Yes, Nick.
Hey, I'm real worried about the cold weather. I don't know. When has he ever pitched a good game in the cold weather? Why not wait and have him go game three, have Porco tonight? What, two crap starts over one good one?
Sure. And Nick, let me stop you. Why do you think it's Price here instead of in the Angels?
I think that one of the reasons they did this is because if Sale can't go the next time around and they need to move someone up to 3 days, that Price has shown he can now do it. I mean, we saw that in the Houston series. I told you that coming in. I wouldn't change the rotation because I now have seen that David Price can pitch on 3 days of rest. And if Sale can't take the ball in game five, if he can't go to the post, then you know what? I'm going with Price again in game five. And now you're in L.A., and it's a good situation for him. So, to me, that's one of the factors. And the other thing is, you know, he's got a good vibe now in this ballpark, right? The last time he pitched here, he didn't pitch all that great, but he got a good support from the crowd, and then he went out and won, and now they're really behind him. So I think that's a factor, too.
Yeah, just look at it as another narrative to be smashed by the bizarre Red Sox. That's all, because he had two more last night. Joe Kelly, who's mostly been a bum all year, and maybe the face of the wheel of gutless bums, looked like John Wetland.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
And now he has off-speed stuff, a changeup that nobody could touch in that Dodgers lineup of the three batters that he faced. So now Joe Kelly's John Wetland. And then let's not forget Eduardo Rodriguez, who puts the game out of reach. Most fans wanted him run out of town in the last series because of how bad his defense is. Oh, but now he comes up. Eduardo Nunez. So he comes up, hits the three-run home run, pinch hit situation. So now he's Jim Leyritz or Kirk Gibson. So, again, the narrative's all shifted here with the bizarre Red Sox that just keep on rolling on. So David Price, he'll probably go 6 2/3 tonight, be nails, give you maybe even 7 innings.
Hey, look, if you get right down to it, you could have taken both of the Eduardos and rubbed them off the planet, and I wouldn't have missed either one. Like, and then last night, one of them gets a big out, albeit by accident, if you ask me, and then Nunez hits a three-run homer, and here you go.
Dan and Quincy, we only have a minute. What do you got?
Well, first of all, I owe you an apology, Tony. I could not believe the amount of beat writers that picked the Red Sox in five games. That was amazing to me. If you had read the list off, I wouldn't have wasted your time or mine on that subject.
Well, there you go.
No worries.
But anyways... And the other thing, I was with you, Tony, I got the feeling that the cockiness of the Red Sox in the first inning to send J.D. Martinez to steal a base with Kershaw facing him as a left-hander was egregious to me. And then when the Dodgers tied it up, I'm like, they're going to blow the game. They wasted that inning. They had nobody outs, two runs on the board, and the next thing I knew, there was three outs, and they were only up 2-0, and they're sending Martinez. What was that all about?
Good job,
dude. Which bullpen is the real bullpen? Is it this one, or is it the one that sucked during the regular season? Because that's the reason why I said they were lucky to be 1-1 against the Yankees and 2 against Houston. Everything slips. I'll add one more to Murray's list. The bullpen has flipped.
Oh, it's totally flipped. I'm sorry, Dan. We're up against it. It's Joe Kelly. Joe Kelly didn't look like John Wetland. Joe Kelly looked like
Pedro.
That off-speed pitch last night, the first one he threw, the strikeout, the first, did he throw Kemp a changeup to strike out the first batter?
It was Kemp. Kemp missed it by 3 feet.
I'm like, what the hell was that? Wait, you usually bounce that 2 feet in front of the plate or yank it to the backstop. What the hell was that?
Oh, yeah. No, that was the Pedro Martinez Bugs Bunny changeup.
That was like, unbelievable.
Oh, yeah. Matt Kemp swung, missed, came back, swung, and missed it again on the same pitch.
And then he did it a couple more times that inning. Like, where did that come from?
I'm telling you, I say this jokingly, but there's a measure of truth in it. Joe Kelly last night had the single greatest outing of his Red Sox career. He was off the charts good, and he looked like Pedro. He threw 100 miles an hour with a changeup that fell off the table. Like, I looked at it and I went, holy crap, where did this come from? Joe freaking Kelly? Like, this is, I half wondered whether they pulled Pedro off the desk, ripped off his suit, put him in a uniform and stuck a Joe Kelly mask on his head and put him on the mound. Because there's no way that was the same bum we watched during the regular season.
Okay, hour to go. No commercials here, just an update. Next hour, we're going to have a special guest. We have a big-time guest on the show. We don't do a ton of guests, but it's a weird time of year. So we've had Perillo and Bedard on as guests the last couple of weeks on the phone. This is going to be a big upgrade, and we love those guys. This is going to be a different caliber of guest. Shortly after 5:30, we're going to talk to the Commissioner of Baseball, Rob Manfred, on the phone. And we really want to get into a lot of things, but most notably the thing that's on all of our minds and is a huge issue with the game, and that is the pacing of the game, the length of the games, and what is baseball prepared to do about it. So that's going to come later on in the 5 o'clock hour. We will continue with your reaction to Game 1. Going into Game 2, we'll do it right after Murray's 90-second update. Again, no commercials here.